Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Reversing Climate Change podcast by the team at Nori, the carbon removal marketplace. This is a show about the innovators and entrepreneurs developing solutions to climate change.
Welcome to the Reversing Climate Change podcast with Nori. I'm one of the co-founders of the Nori Carbon Removal Marketplace based in Seattle, Washington. Today I have with me Heidi Slong for her first podcast appearance in human history. That's too broad of a time period, but it's also true, I guess, technically.
First ever in this life,
maybe that's a little bit more contained human scale. You are the senior marketing manager at Nori. You led our recent brand refinement efforts, which I think safe to say was a very successful undertaking. It was a lot of fun. It went pretty smoothly, which doesn't always happen, right? I feel like there's more turbulent ways of doing that.
There are definitely more turbulent ways.
Yeah. Have you seen any, or was that a... We just know this.
I've only seen one that felt turbulent, which I guess is lucky. I think I've seen like now 10 total, either building from scratch or rebrand or refinement, something in between. And the turbulent one can just mean it gets to the end of it and whatever was created doesn't get used. And then it is very soul sucking because all the time and resources that went into like transforming it feel wasted. And you know, if you're just doing a brand refinement, it's because you decided there's something that you want to refine. So then to make that decision, invest the money and the time in doing it and get to the end and not like the result enough to adopt it. Woof.
It's a tricky thing too. I'm going to ask you to define brand. It's one of those things that I think people, because they're consumers and they experience so much of their life as consumers and experiencers of brand, interactors with brand, they think they know what makes a good one. It's not something like you don't just dabble in software or something. You're like, oh, I know a lot about that. But brand is something where maybe people feel entitled to opinions and maybe they need to weaken those in certain cases. Because I bet someone listening right now is hearing us say brand. And now that I'm shining the spotlight on it, what even is brand? What does this mean? Maybe I don't know anything at all. What is life? So what is brand, Heidi?
I think there's a lot of answers for this, but I like the idea that brand is whatever people think of you, like not you, but your company. So you can't fully control it, what people are going to think, but you can move the lever on things. So the way your brand appears visually, from like your logo to all the different elements, photo, illustration, that can influence the way people perceive your company. It could also be the content you put out. It can be the people who are on your team showing up on panels, posting on LinkedIn. All these things contribute to the idea that people have and the feelings that your company generates in their brain.
Yeah, it seems like those are all instrumental means of getting to something like, when I think about Lululemon, I think the clothing is going to be comfortable and supportive of an athletic lifestyle. Is that a brand association? Is that an okay working?
Yeah, it's the perception you have of their brand. Also, like reputation plays into it. So it's not all something that a design agency can do for you. There's a lot of the, like, it's not just show, but also do.
Yeah, you can't just be saying that we are the world's most innovative X company and you have stock from 30 years ago that you've never updated. You can't just like wish that into existence.
Yeah, exactly.
So then does your work with brand extend beyond the instrumental means that you described, which is sort of the visual assets, the copy that's written, the messaging, and the more like traditional marketing comms products? Is it also something like product innovation and what is being created? Because those also seemingly influence people a lot, and probably for the people who are paying closer attention, that presumably matters more than the adornments?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say what matters more, but if you have a beautiful visual brand and website, but then your products are junk.
That red flag.
In the B2C world, like, I have a cold brew coffee company. And when we were thinking about the bottle design, we were like, okay, we need to make sure that the bottle design compels people to take it off the shelf. And so, like, in that case, the visual brand was responsible for the person trying it for the first time.
Oh.
But then after that, if the cold brew isn't good, people aren't going to buy it again.
Counterpoint, what is happening with Liquid Death? I do not understand how that is a successful brand.
I think that's a successful brand because it made drinking water, like, cool.
It's just a cold brew to make it cool. I don't really get it.
Well, I think, so I don't drink alcohol, and I guess at a party, having a can of Liquid Death kind of like slides in easier than a Poland Spring water bottle.
That's
not that I would have that because I bring my own water bottle because I care about the climate.
Dang, there's so many levels to that. But yeah, I guess if I saw someone drinking Poland Spring I guess a lot of the water brands, they tend to focus on the natural. Like, where the water comes, is it from Fiji? Is it from Switzerland? Or Evian is French? And I like the idea of just going as far from that as possible as Liquid Death. I guess that's sort of a hardcore counter to traditional water. I actually like it more now that you've explained that. Maybe I should pick
it up. And I think some people will just like it because it is kind of ridiculous. Like, for the right, they know who they're trying to reach with that. And I think they're doing it well. And if you want to look at sustainability of single use water options, the can is more sustainable than the bottle. So,
But they haven't gone boxed yet.
I don't know if the box is better.
Oh, really?
Expertise. I know can is definitely better than bottle.
Yeah.
Because aluminum can be recycled again and again and again without degrading quality, and the plastic and glass can't. The glass would be best if it was actually reused or returned, like the old school system where the really thick Coke cans go back, Coke bottles go back to the factory to be washed and refilled. But that's rare today.
I've seen that in other parts of the world. I haven't really seen that in the United States, but there's certainly bottle deposits elsewhere, places you can bring to the local convenience store and get money back. I like your original example, though, where you're. So your brand identity for your cold brew company, it was responsible for someone catching someone's attention and making them want to make that purchase. But if the interior product was not a hit, then it didn't matter. It was only there to get someone on the hook. And then your actual work must be successful. Does that apply to something that is e-commerce related in this way? How is it alike and how is it different?
So e-commerce, I'd say yes too, because I've seen this work with other products that were e-commerce first. And it was just like, okay, when somebody sees it on their Instagram feed, like having really attractive packaging makes them curious about it. And then even in my pre-Nori life, I worked with Sophie, one of the designers that we work with here at Nori, on some packaging for superfood bars, and it got accepted into, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Irwan, the really trendy store in LA.
I keep seeing pictures from it. It looks pretty cool.
They wanted it before they even tasted it based on the design and the ingredients. So, anyway, this feels like a big tangent, but with something like Nori, I don't think it's necessarily that anybody is going to be like, ooh, I want to buy carbon removal credits from this company because their brand looks great. But I think it's more...
Maybe, right? Surely that's part of it for some.
Maybe, but I don't think it's like... I don't think it's the same type of consumerism where I feel like, ooh, I have to try this. It looks so good. But I think it's more like if they see us in their LinkedIn feed or at an event, or if they find out about Nori by talking to you or to Matt one-on-one, and then they go online and see us on the internet, the way, the aesthetic matches the quality of the company and could help move the needle forward, or at very least won't hold us back.
Yeah, sort of how I was thinking about it. Maybe it's necessary, but not sufficient. Because our old brand, when we first did it, this is prior to your times here, Heidi, but I think some of the words that I chose that would help guide the brand development were a little too located inside of my own personality, where I wanted things to be ecumenical and exploratory and creative and quirky. And that led to a lot of organic shapes and blobs and color. And that's cool. That's cool for my personal brand. Maybe that's good for Reversing Climate Change as a podcast. That is what it is. Basically just a reflection of my personality for the most part. But the company maybe took a little too strong of a hold of that, because I don't know that it was always the most... Companies are making B2B purchases, business-to-business purchases for their own sake. Companies buying offsets. I think one of the key things that they're looking for probably is a company that's not going to embarrass them publicly. Like, the downside risk is there. And so having something that signals quirkiness is not necessarily the best B2B identity. You want something... I'm sorry, I've said this so many times, but the example I come back to is banks in neoclassical architecture. Like, columns are there because everyone associates them with ruins or buildings that are still standing thousands of years later. Banks do that to say, we're here to stay, we're not going anywhere. And our brand did kind of the opposite. We're like, we just noodle on ideas, and we're like really fun people. And that's, I don't think that was correct. And we learned that. Do you agree with that, by the way? You can poke at it any way you want.
I agree. And I think it's also, when that brand was created, I think one of the primary audiences in mind was like the crypto Web3 world. And maybe it was better calibrated for that. But it was looking at individuals. And I think when you're looking at individuals, those instincts to want to be quirky, approachable, can make sense. And there is a space for that in B2B too, maybe just a little bit more subtle and with the underpinning of trust. But I think knowing what the carbon removal market is like, and knowing that buyers are looking to know that there's quality and trust behind their purchases, because that's one of the biggest fears that needs to be addressed, or within the company and all the different stakeholders they have to get approval from, making sure the brand can uphold, the vision can uphold that this is a trustworthy source. Like you said, these, like, whatever I get from them, I can trust to be quality, and I won't be embarrassed about this decision later when something goes wrong. And I think from a quality, like when I was joining Nori, that was one of the things that attracted me to Nori. I was like, wow, this company seems like what they're doing is very cool and legit. And I had heard Paul, one of the co-founders, speak, and he was so smart, and everything he was saying made sense. But then I saw the brand. Like, I actually heard about Nori before seeing Nori. And when I saw the brand, it felt disjointed, and I thought that that was an opportunity. Like, oh, like, I'd much rather join a company where I think what they're doing is important and substantial and legit, and have the opportunity to improve the brand to match it, the visual brand, then join a company that looks so good and so sexy and so cool, but has no substance behind that.
Wow. That's nice. I feel like I recall this from way back when, but it's been so long since I've heard you talk about it in that way. Is there anything in particular that felt disjointed to you, or something that tonally just struck you as off when you were looking at our brand originally?
It felt less mature, and it felt B2C, in my understanding.
Like selling directly to consumers, right?
Yeah, it felt like it was trying to appeal to consumers directly who would be purchasing for themselves. And the aesthetics just didn't seem as sophisticated as what would be required to have a decision maker at a company deciding to add it to their portfolio without knowing Nori. I can definitely, like, I think there's also the difference in the stage of the company, where when you're going with friendlies and people that you have personal connections with, I don't necessarily think that the brand was holding anything back. But then when you're looking to scale and reach people who you might never have a personal connection with, then I think that's where it becomes a bit more important.
Yeah. Maybe. Like you're going in for a job interview. You don't want to be wearing those pajama pants. That's a time for the suit and tie kind of thing. Yeah, maybe for the friendlies, they're like, oh, Nori, I know Nori. They're smart people. They're a little silly, but they mean well. They're trying really hard and they're smart. But I guess you probably don't get a chance for people to know you if you're wearing pajama pants. They're probably just like, this person's.
Yeah. Like what about the people who are searching carbon removal credits online and finding us through Google search? Like,
yeah. One counterpoint I've heard for this, Heidi, is that B2C style marketing can work even in B2B context because everyone is a person and everyone has a sort of consumer identity, and appealing to people individually rather than corporately can work. So you might be able to attract people to your brand as individuals who become advocates at their company. And if you're different from everyone else who's doing more serious adult B2B marketing, maybe it helps you stand out. Is there any credibility to that argument, or do you think that's false?
I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah, there are people, like if you're doing B2B, business to business, the business on both sides has people.
I mean, that's the part is inarguable.
At least for now. I think that's also like, we don't want Nori to look like a bank, right? We want Nori to look trustworthy, but we don't want it to be completely boring. Yeah, but we don't want to look like a bank, but we still want to have like the foundational elements there that make us come across as trustworthy, which we are. So having some foundational elements that establish those attributes enable you to layer on the quirky stuff in a way that doesn't undermine the trust, if that makes sense. We still have some illustrations. We didn't totally do away with that part of our visual language.
They're called Yellow, them. By the way, Heidi, sorry.
Yellows?
Yeah.
Yeah, just for short. That's a typed, not spoken.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay, my mistake. How do you... go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's like if you have a... You can accessorize, or if you have like a trustworthy sweater on, then you can wear some fun earrings or something like that. And I think, too, it's not all... Like, not all the pressure is on the visual brand, right? Because we have reversing climate change. We have the meme lab. These things are building the brand perception that people have of Nori. So we're still doing the things that can make people love us from the unique, quirky, sometimes silly, and very niche side of things.
Which that exists, at least personally, interior to Nori, that is a strong element that runs through the halls of this company, and that's good.
I remember when we were doing the branding process, and we were questioning how, like, where the right balance was, having a conversation about you. And, like, you're wearing a button-up shirt and, like, some regular, nice but regular pants, but doesn't stop you from being funny.
I remember this conversation. We were discussing my pants and my sense of humor.
Like, how, like, your appearance doesn't limit your actions, if that makes sense. Like, even if Nori's visual identity ended up in a place that was more buttoned up, mm-hmm. it wouldn't limit us from doing things that establish us, have the personality we're seeking to have.
I like that. That's a really coherent way of putting it. I wanted to ask you to unpack a little bit this idea of layering. One of the things we heard too, and we also insist on this, is that trustworthy is the default for a B2B brand. You want to be trustworthy, because if you don't want that, then what are you doing? It's like, I'd like to be a good company. You and everybody else who has a company, that's no one intends to start a bad company, really. But like, you have to keep certain kinds of words or terms or concepts to layer. And how does that process work?
So we did internally the brand workshop, I think February of last year. Is that right? Yeah. Or that's January of last year. And we were talking about like what attributes we want people to think of when they think of Nori. We were thinking of like, how do we want people to feel at different like touch points? Like when they see us on their newsfeed for the first time, when they're on our website, when they meet us at an event, when whatever, when they see our different types of content, how do we want to make them feel? But the funny thing is, in that workshop, the attributes that we were singling out as being important to us were things like trustworthy and approachable, and I think friendly, optimistic. Then when we met with our design partners, Odie, one of the first things I remember hearing from them is like, yeah, we're not going to let you use trustworthy or approachable as the things you're striving for, because those are just kind of table stakes or what's expected from any B2B, modern B2B company now. So we had to go a little bit deeper and think, okay, what is it that we want behind the trustworthiness? And I think where we landed was this idea of enduring, that Nori's been here for 7 years, which in carbon removal industry is actually a long time. And we're building and adapting and intend to be here for many more years to come. And that's important because people are buying carbon removal credits from us, and we have like contractual agreements that the farmers are storing that carbon in the soil for 10 years. Newer products have longer storage. So having a company that's enduring behind the products that you also want to be enduring seemed important. And then we also went with optimistic. And so then throughout the design process, we are going back to make sure that the work that was being produced was hitting those three elements. So does it look trustworthy? Does it look optimistic? Does it look science-based? And not every individual piece of the whole hits all of those notes, but the collective hits it pretty well.
Those attributes feel like they could apply to many carbon removal marketplaces. Is there a risk of collision with other brand identities, since those are common things marketplaces want to convey? Or are there ways of making sure that you can hit these notes, but do it in your idiosyncratic, valuable way?
I think both. I think there's, like, we can definitely do it in our own way. And now it feels like we are. And then also, I think that it's fair that any carbon or sustainability company would want to hit those notes. I don't know. I think some of them are hitting more notes than others, or doing it in varying degrees.
Interesting.
Yeah. We did some early comparison work, and it wasn't us. It was Odie. They kind of graded what was being hit and to what degree by the people that we wanted to stand apart from, or the companies we wanted to stand apart from while also fitting in alongside.
That sounds like something you just made up, Heidi, but really that's, yeah, that is the
Well, opinion. I guess if somebody's considering their options, they're going to look at multiple companies, and, you know, we're all united by the goal of ultimately reversing climate change, at least mitigating it. And so, yeah, we're peers with other companies in the space, but we also want to have our way to stand out.
Yeah.
And there are things that we're doing that are similar that we've also taken our own approach to. Like, so many companies have made the decision to use photos of the world we're looking to protect in their visual language. And we have too. But we were really intentional about having only using photos that look kind of familiar and not too utopian, applying a filter that made it look like it could be taken by anybody instead of the super high def, super bright, fake looking type of treatment.
Yeah, I see what you mean there. It's tough to figure out the right balance there, because Nori is fairly idiosyncratic, and we've made choices about how we're constructing our marketplace, the types of assets that we focus on that are not always the same as what others in carbon removal are doing, for better or for worse. I think for better, I hope for better. That's the intention, at least. Of course, we're respectful of people who've made different decisions within the industry. That's their prerogative, and they should be doing that. But you want to signal that, hey, we're credible. Hey, we're part of this thing too. But also at the same time, we've gone our own way and are not just followers. We're not just one of a pack. That's a, I can say those words and I can understand those words, but it also seems really hard to pick out how you do both of those things at the same time. Are you able to help me with it?
Yeah. Something that came to mind when you were saying it was an idea that I had, like, I don't know, week six into week nine of the process. And it was definitely too late. And I don't even know that it was a good idea. Probably wasn't. But if it is a good idea, now it's a free idea that anybody out there can just take and run with. If we're so concerned about making sure that we're offering products that, you know, companies can buy with confidence and not worry about greenwashing and help guide their claim so they know, like, if they claim to do what the product actually does, they don't have to worry about greenwashing. What if we just make it so our brand has no green anywhere in it and, like, make that thing? And then, I don't know, I thought it was either brilliant or silly, and I don't know because I haven't tested the waters with it, but that would be a way to do it. With us, I think we didn't do that. With us, I think it's about the actions and what we do, less so than, like, oh, here's our visual brand that's achieving that. We don't need to wear a clown suit to make a joke and juggle.
I remember that part. I feel like that was directed at me personally.
No, that was the part that was related back to your outfits.
Oh, yeah. I know. That's what he said. Wow. No green. So no greenwashing.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't do that.
Let's see. Wow. That's kind of a fun idea. I wonder, like, does stuff like that read? Do people at least subconsciously make that connection? Or is that one of those cerebral things that comes in that just reads as, why is there nothing green on this?
I don't know.
You don't
I
know?
Really don't. And also, it is very attractive to have green and, like, nature imagery when your company is focused on that, those things.
Yeah, I think it's almost pleasing for its own sake, too. I think people associate green with what, intelligence and calm. And there are good associations with that color, at least for, like, global north eyes or people of certain cultures. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do subliminal cues like that work? For instance, I could see a site that was using really strong primary colors without any, like, differences in hue or gradients, so that it was just, like, boom, color block. And that signals, like, we're confident and decisive, but also kind of too binary. Depends on how you look at it, right? Like, it's either a really good thing or a really bad thing. Or you could have these gradients which show there's a lot of nuance here. Like, we're trying to be thoughtful and find the exact right balance. That can also look wishy-washy, that, like, you don't actually...
Yes.
Like, are these things inherently good or bad? Like, what are you trying to signal into whom? This is really hard.
Yeah. Within our brand library, we've got some gradients and we've got not gradients, solid colors as they're called. And we were recently working on some materials and we originally had some gradients, but we knew that we wanted these particular materials to read more enduring than optimistic. And so we replaced the colorful gradient parts with solid pine. And it really made a difference. So it's nice having elements in your toolbox that allow you to lean into the different things you're trying to hit depending on the assets or materials.
Given how qualitative all these things are, it's hard to know that it all adds up to the impression that, because you're not your customer. So
no.
How do you know this adds up in their brain to something that is what you feel when you experience it?
Yeah. And that's something I think through our process and having so many stakeholders giving feedback on the weekly deliverables that we received, having the attributes that you were trying to hit or the thing that you wanted, I think our single most important thing was the science-based optimism, even though you're in a really challenging situation, to not say sanguine.
I love that word. Dang it. But yeah, okay.
And being able to put aside people's personal opinions where, like, okay, I don't like it. But then be like, okay, does it achieve this? And that was a really helpful tool. So we don't know. We know what we want this brand to achieve and we can do our best. But ultimately, the test will be, what do people think of Nori? And the brand, the visual brand influences that, but it's just one piece of a much bigger puzzle.
One of the aspects of this that I thought you handled very well was the stakeholder management component of it, because as the old joke goes, a camel is a horse built by a committee. And like someone's like, well, it should have some humps. Well, it should have, it should have a super long neck and store water. Like, you know, then it has everything in it and it basically appeals to no one, pleases no one, but everyone got their little thing that they wanted in it. And that's not the right outcome. And the fact that it went smoothly, I think people, one of my experiences from working on projects and working in film was that if you do your job well as a producer, it mostly just works and no one even knows that you did anything because the system just worked. And you can sometimes look like less of a leader if it works well, but if it goes badly and you're able to thread the needle at that point, then it looks like you're leading. But if you avoid that entire process through skillful structural management, then your role is in some ways invisible. I feel like you're much closer to that invisibility aspect of it, which I thought was a really skillful thing because it's the possibilities here for someone to have really strong opinions and derail things, super high, right? For any company, basically. Like the wrong types of permissions, the wrong types of expectations, the wrong people in the room at the wrong time, it could lead to chaos. And you avoided it.
Thank you. I feel like there were some bumps along the way, but we were proactive in like going to, okay, so what's the problem solving side of it instead of letting it spiral?
Yeah. Well, how do you, for something that is creative and people have strong feelings about qualitative aesthetic choices like this, they care about the company, therefore they want it to reflect their values. Like I sort of maybe took us on a wrong turn in our first go at this several years ago. Like, how did you do it? Or how did you try to think about setting it up for maybe a company that is going through a similar kind of multi-team involving all of leadership and others too, trying to make this work at their company? What advice might you have for them?
I think, I think the strategy that we did before we even started with our design agency was important. And even though there was quite a lag between that internal workshop and us starting to work on it, having had it and having like had the space where people were sharing what they wanted the brand to feel like and how, even if we didn't take every piece of that, creating the space for people to express it, I think is important. Mm-hmm. And knowing what the role of the stakeholders is in the process and knowing, with Odie, they had our design partner. They had a nice process where we would be forced to present unified feedback. They didn't want the collection of all the feedback everybody gave. So we would have to, as a project team, me, you, and Christy, go through it, consider what this feedback was, decide whether it was something that we wanted to incorporate into our overall feedback that we were going to submit unified to steer us in one direction versus presenting everything, or if it was something that we're saying, okay, we hear this feedback, but we think it's going to be most successful if we carry on this way anyway. So having to go through on our side and give unified feedback, I think, was a helpful step to make sure the feedback we were giving the design partners was productive and that each week felt like it was advancing. And I think also knowing, like, when is feedback where you can consider it? Or is it something where this is like, if a top decision maker is going to feel like it can't move forward unless this changes, that's important to know too, because it's valid that those moments happen, but it's being prepared for it and adapting quickly.
But that was a thing too, where Matt, our new CEO, was newer at the time, and we hadn't all figured out when a suggestion is but a suggestion, and when is a suggestion a nice way of issuing an edict, essentially. And trying to figure out, like, okay, are you vetoing this, or is this just a thing that you feel should be on equal playing field with all the other feedback? And sometimes most of the time it was the latter, but there were times when it was the former, and we needed to know that. We actually didn't communicate well enough to know that because we didn't have the experience. That's just a new person that you don't have that with necessarily.
Well, up front, we did check in to see what the expectation was. And it was like just one of the people giving feedback part of the group. And I think it's one of those things where it's very valid that a CEO would want to overrule a decision or move something in a different way.
It is their job, by the way. Like, it is their responsibility to do that in really important matters.
So I think it's one of those things where maybe he didn't know that he would want or need veto power until it came up. And so I remember that specifically there was one color that some people liked, some people didn't like. He was in the camp of people who didn't like it, but we decided to move forward with it. Had that color never been part of our palette, maybe he would never have used veto power, you know, maybe. So it's hard to know ahead of time.
But yeah, he would have just chosen some other place to exert authority. Just if it's own, it might have just been, I can't live with this color. I really think it harms the brand. It stands out, or I've heard comments about it, or, you know.
But it's also fair, because if he's going to if he's going to have merch or a business card or be looking at the website or be standing in front of a booth one day that has our colors and it's the color he hates.
Yeah.
We can't accommodate everybody, but I think we can accommodate the CEO on that.
Yeah, but for the rest of the people that were involved, it was mostly Nori's leadership team and a few others that wanted to weigh in on this and that wanted their opinions too. And there's also a strong anti-consensus mentality here. There's no expectation that we were all going to agree, and that's okay, right? So it was your job, because you led this. So everyone would give this feedback. It would come to Christy, you and I as marketing, creative and marketing here. And then that would be, we would figure out, like, unified feedback does not necessarily mean consensus. We're determining what is actually important that we want to carry on. Is that your understanding?
Yeah. It was like, so what feedback do we move forward? And a lot of times, I mean, we had our own individual feedback too. So it wasn't just that we were looking for the feedback from the group. A lot of it was feedback that we ourselves had and had to also, you know, measure and see if it was super subjective or if it was something that we could pass on as functional feedback. One thing I think was really helpful for me is we engaged Sophie, who is our on retainer, ongoing designer at Nori. And I've worked with her so many times before and really trust her on design stuff. So having her included in this process and contributing to the feedback, whenever I had a doubt about something, like, I would kind of go to her for her expert opinion before advancing further. Or if I wasn't sure if something I was thinking was off or valid, I'd kind of check in with her to gut check.
It's nice to have people in your pocket like that, that maybe have a little bit more distance. I think there's almost a bias of people who are inside of a company weighing it, because obviously they have they care about it, the company, the most, because they work there. Maybe they've co-founded.
Yeah, it's more emotional for people who are in the company. And also, you know, I still have the sticker from our previous Nori brand on my laptop, and I'll still use the hat. There's love for the previous brand too. It's not just good riddance. So I think to go through going back to what I said at the beginning, to go through a brand refinement, or in this case, it started as a brand refinement and kind of ended up as a rebrand. To go through that process, you have to like whatever's being created more than your previous brand, and you're constantly comparing it to the brand that you're already familiar and comfortable with. And for an outsider, it's very objective, where for an insider, it's got a lot more tied up in it.
Yeah, I think it's good to check those impulses too, or make space for people who have a bit more distance. Also, they have their own biases too. They might advocate for things that do not reflect the company's values or vision in the right kind of way, because they just don't have that perspective. So it seems wise to find ways to balance the two. Do you think there's anything about, with regard to rebrands or just brand in general, do you think there's anything specific that people who work at climate tech or carbon removal companies might want to make note of? Or does what we've said Or does what we've discussed today broadly apply to companies generally?
I think it applies to companies generally, including the climate space. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Is there anything specific that would apply to a climate company?
Well, tell us we're special. I don't want to be told we're just like everybody else who's selling widgets.
Well, I think we are special, not necessarily from a brand perspective, but I was talking to two friends, one who was at a sustainability conference recently, and she's a sustainability manager, and she was mainly interacting with other sustainability roles. And another friend works in AI, and he was at a recent AI event talking to other people in that world. And she was saying how her experience was everybody is just like, hey, how did you do that? Like, I want to try and figure out that thing too. And they're just like sharing advice and really trying to help each other advance because they've got the common goal of mitigating climate change, of making their companies more sustainable. Whereas the friend in AI, in earlier years when he'd go to these conferences, it kind of had a similar vibe where people were sharing more information and now people are publishing more research. Now he says it's so like almost like arms race, like where people don't want to share because from one company to another, what they're working on, like everybody's just like competing to do the next thing. Maybe not an answer to your question, but I think what climate space has and is that's unique is even with our competition, like there's this idea of we all want each other to succeed because we have a common goal. Yeah. Well, I guess just one thing that we ended up doing when we started this, we didn't want to change our logo. Like we all liked our logo that we had before. And all the designers and design agencies we spoke to wanted to include in their scope a logo redesign. And it got to the point where it was like, okay, if all these designers and design agencies are wanting to improve our logo, let's at least like open the door for them to present options. We don't have to take it. We can see what they bring up. And in our process, logo was one of the first things that they started working on. And I think it was a point of friction for us because it was the only thing that we had to anchor in. And we were like, if we already liked our logo, looking at these ideas for new logos that we didn't like as much felt challenging. But then when we shifted gears and worked on the visual language, like photos, data visualizations, illustrations, the arrow element, and those things, it made it easier to come back to the logo and feel like, okay, our new logo, our old logo doesn't feel harmonious with this new world that we're trying to build out visually. And I think it made it easier for us to embrace the idea of a new logo and find a logo that would work in our new playground.
Yeah, I think it would have looked somewhat strange to have everything else change, but the logo remained the same. I'm not even sure. I think we probably would have collectively realized that that was an error before we concluded the process.
But I do think it was easier to look at logo after everything else was in place because we had a clearer idea of what we were going for.
Well, I think that's right. Yeah, I think that decision was well made. I'm glad we did it that way, ultimately. That was you thing. You were just like, we got to pause this and focus on the typefaces and the visual grammar and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Well, and because it was a scoped project. So if we got to the end of those weeks and all we had was a new logo and we didn't have the things that we originally went there for, that would have been disappointing. But then another Sophie reference, when we were working on the packaging, like we were doing a brand from scratch for a snack bar line. And we start like the logo was the last thing we thought about because we're like, okay, like what do we want the packaging to look like? Like what do we want everything else to look like? Because the logo is just this little piece on a bigger surface area.
I don't know. People maybe unduly focus on it as the most important thing, but I don't know that I feel the same about logos in general after this process. I see them more as a nice little adornment at the end and not the main part of the brand work. I think maybe lay people or people with a little more distance think that it's mostly getting to that logo, getting to that sweet, sweet logo. I don't really like, I think that's the lesser portion of this.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, maybe the logo matters more in B2B and in tech than it would in other industries, because like what you'll see in the profile image across any like the avatar, the logo, there is no bottle or wrapper for a bar that you see. So like the business card will have the logo. I don't know. I can see where it matters more here, but from a process perspective, it felt easier to address after.
Well, Heidi, thanks for being here. Thanks for allowing us to be your first podcast ever. That's really, really
cool. Doesn't even feel like a podcast. It just feels like a Zoom.
That's the ultimate goal, I think, at least for some of these. Yeah. Nice and natural. Hopefully it's useful. If you're listening and you're at a climate tech company or some other company, this is at least how one climate tech company thinks about brand. And thanks for leading that process, Heidi. I think it came out really successfully. Nice feather in your cap. So good for you.
Thank you. Thanks for trusting me with the rebrand. And I guess thanks to Norvid for wanting to do this process. It's exciting to feel like the brand is of a similar caliber as what the company does and what products we have.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I think sometimes there's a counter signaling desire where people focus on the hardware or the actual product. And if you're in carbon removal, you care about the actual process of removing it. But there's a importance and a dignity to just the visual identity of a, maybe it's necessary, but not sufficient. Obviously, if your hardware doesn't work, nothing else really matters. But yeah, well, thank you, Heidi.
Thanks, Ross.
Thank you so much for listening. If you could please subscribe and give us a great rating and review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify, that'd be much appreciated. It helps us get our content out to more people. You can sign up for our newsletter at nori.com, follow us on social media, and we will catch you next time.